Welcome, everybody, to the Legendarium Green Team Podcast. Happy Halloween, or almost Halloween for those that are listening. I'm your host, Yeti Beats, and with me today, I have Little Red Book.
Hello.
And our first-timer, Combat Wombat.
Hello, everyone.
And today...
You think you could get your voice any deeper, Wombat?
Probably, if I wanted to, yeah.
I feel emasculated. I gotta start getting deeper in these host duties. So today we're discussing, since it's Halloween, or it's being released around Halloween, we figured why not talk about the master of horror himself and discuss the book Carrie, Stephen King's first ever published book. I don't know about you guys, but I kind of have a memory of Stephen King from a very early age, and I thought we would just start this podcast essentially just talking about what your relationship to Stephen King is, and you know, either some books that you, the first book you read by him, if you actually enjoy his writing, if he's the only horror you read, and things like that. So why don't we start with you, Red? What's your relationship to the master of horror?
That would be Edgar Allan Poe, not Stephen King. I have it's very hit and miss with me for his books. I've read The Dark Tower, and that was actually the first thing I read by him. And I like it. It's kind of horror-y in places. It also needs an editor to tell him to cut things. I've also read The Stand, and this is the first time I've read Carrie, although I have seen the movie. I'm not really a horror person, but I like a good ghost story. So I guess I should probably read the hotel one.
The Shining, yeah.
Yeah, The Shining. But he's very hit or miss with me, and he just has a lot of weird sex stuff in his books. Like, weird sex stuff.
He definitely has that. That is definitely a true statement. Combat, what about you? You're probably the person who has read the most King out of all of us. What's your relationship to the author?
Yeah, I mean, I think I found King at really the golden age that you maybe should or shouldn't find him at, probably like 12 or 13. I actually don't remember my first novel by him, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was The Gunslinger. And I've read, a ton of his stuff. I mean, he's on my pantheon of greatest horror writers. Hit or miss. I mean, there's the comic critique of his endings and some other things, which I think are true. But I love the guy. This is my second time reading Carrie. I think the first time I read it was probably 15 years ago. So felt like a pretty fresh read. And I think he's great.
Yeah, I've seen your Goodreads, and you read a lot of King. That's not a joke. Done. That's interesting that you both, the books you both brought up first was The Dark Tower, which essentially this is mostly a fantasy podcast, sci-fi fantasy. So that is interesting. Do you guys think, I'm just thinking, because you're fantasy fans, I wonder, is that why you guys gravitated towards those books first?
I think so. And I also gravitated towards it because I knew it was the first book in a series. And it's not 5 bazillion pages long. It's a very short, compact book. And I was like, well, I'll give it a try. I was dating a guy at the time, too, who was a Stephen King fan.
My dad actually kind of red-pilled me on King about that age. And one of his favorite novels is probably King's most fantastical work, which is The Eyes of the Dragon, if anyone listening is familiar. Kind of a quintessential high fantasy type book, but with a villain that appears in a lot of other King works. I won't say more than that, just in case people don't want things spoiled. I think there's a lot of overlap, and it definitely, you know, horror is my first kind of real reading love, but the segue was very natural, and I gotta think King was probably a big influence in that. So yeah.
But Nettie, you haven't told us what you
my introduction to King, honestly, is probably because I love movies, and is Stand By Me. And I don't think I was aware of it at the time. But when I watched that, and my dad also, he told me that's, you know, it's a Stephen King story. He writes horror. I'm like, well, that wasn't scary. Even though as a kid, I was horrified by the throw up scene with their eating pies.
You know what? I just realized I lied. My first Stephen King story was The Running Man.
Oh.
It was published under Stephen King. And that was when
Bachman.
I was in.
Oh, right. Yeah, Bachman. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Anyway, sorry. Continue.
No, yeah, it's fine. So interestingly enough, that's where I came to his work. And I never really started reading him until I guess my 20s, early 20s, when I started to get back into reading. And I started with Under the Dome because I love the cover. And I actually love that book, but I remember it getting a lot of flack at the time because it was like a ripoff of the Simpsons movie, they said, all these jokes and the ending and things. But there was something so visceral about his writing, that's terrible things that are happening to these people in a contained location. And it just, at that age, it really drew me in, but also his characters and the way what the real horror is. Like the big horror is that in that book, I'm not going to spoil too much, but a dome comes down on this town. And the real horror of that book is that the people inside it, kind of how fast they turn on each other or power goes to the head. And things like that, and what they do when they're so contained, kind of like Lord of the Flies in a way. So that really kind of got my juices going for King. And ever since I've been trying to chug along through his books. Usually, you know, I read them around this time of year in the fall. I now live in New England, so I'm very close to Maine where he grew up. So I feel like it's a birthright. You have to kind of read it here if you want to live here. So
one of his most annoying texts.
Was just being in Maine all the time, setting everything in Maine.
Yeah.
Some say the better Portland. I don't know.
No. I live in
in Oregon, and you guys can have that one that time.
Yeah. I was gonna say I would have said 10 years ago that my Portland is the better Portland, but now I'm not so sure.
Yeah, we're on the up and up. Changing place. It's like a star is born. One's up, one's down. Cool. Then I guess. Real quick before we go into a recap of Carrie, Red, just give us spoiler-free just what you thought of Carrie, the book, your general impressions, how it compared to maybe other King books, or just you kind of let on that maybe you weren't the biggest fan of this book.
I am not. So I don't consider myself a feminist by any stretch of the imagination. This kind of made me want to be a feminist. I kind of don't like it. I kind of think that it's on the border of misogynistic, and I don't think King understands how women work or girls work. I think he observed from the outside Mean Girls and didn't understand how Mean Girls actually work, if that makes sense. So I kind of didn't like it. It kind of made me mad.
No, that's fair. I think I know. We'll get into it. I think I know where you're going. I would like to respond a little bit to that. But I mean, I also think the unrealistic nature of some of the characters, I think it's heightened. I think that's a fair thing to say, where you're saying like people wouldn't act like that. But I also would argue, I don't think it takes away from some of the horror in it. But yeah. All right.
So it's definitely horrific in a lot of places. And there are certain things that I can see that happening in the it's the interpersonal dynamics. It's not like the fantasy or horror element that I have a problem with.
Right.
Well, there's one, but whatever.
What about you, Wombat? This is your second time reading it. And where does it rank in the King hierarchy or just generally if you enjoyed this book your second time through?
Yeah, I mean, I would say I like it. I'm not hot or cold on it, but just kind of warm. It's probably a mid-tier King book for me. This is very first one, though, so I'll give him a lot of grace there. I think he was still finding his legs a little bit. There's definitely things to nitpick, I think, and things that I enjoyed. And it is amazing to me just how much King voice you get in this one. You know, King has that, like, you could hand me a King novel and I'd not know who it is. And within 20, 30 pages, just his unique voice and his story, I think, stands out here. Kind of fascinating, because I think sometimes authors take a while to really, you know, get their legs under him. But yeah, there's good and bad. I'm excited to dive into it, but I feel just fine about this book.
I was struck by that too. I mean, like, immediately his first book, which this is, he has that King voice. Where you're like, oh, it's just a Stephen King book. You know, whether it's good or bad, you're like, oh, it just puts you right in that mood. Like, yeah. Billy Porter, like that type of bully or villain is like, oh, classic King. He already had it down. Like, he already had that type of character down. So I thought that was interesting. Yeah. So I will say, there is one person I know of that agrees with Red that they do not like this book and are down on it. And that is Stephen King himself. I mean, he's been pretty open where he kind of doesn't like his work in this book. He finds the movie superior. He notoriously threw this first draft out. And the only reason it got published is because his wife picked it up out of the trash and said, I think you have something here, and told him to continue writing it. But he famously is not the biggest fan of his Carrie itself.
So what I will say is that it is, first of all, I love the structure of the book. And I think somebody asked
me too.
About this.
Yep.
So it's a combination.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. I have quite the bone to pick with the structure in this book, actually. So, it'll be fun to get there.
Yeah. So it's kind of like an epistolary, I believe is how you pronounce the word, book. So you have media snippets and you have interviews and you have parts of memoirs and whatnot, as well as a running kind of third person narrative.
Right.
And I thought it was so well executed, especially for a first novel. And it is very clear. He has actually, I wrote down a quote, but he has some just beautiful, wonderful lines in this book. He is 100% a talent, and it shows.
Not going to disagree with you there. He knows how to write. All right, let's get into it. And I guess before we get into spoilers, I'll do kind of a shoddy recap of the book, Carrie. Personally, my least favorite parts of any of these podcasts is me trying to spark notes the books, but I'm gonna do it. And feel free to plug in. But Carrie is essentially a girl who we meet in the beginning, who has, let's say, her period. I guess, frankly, just say she has her period in public, in the showers, at school, and she gets severely bullied from it. And from then on out, it is pretty much, you just kind of, like Red says, it goes back and forth from this bullying with newspaper clippings, interviews from books that were talked about something ominous that happens in the near future after this bullying. And you meet Carrie, you meet her and her mother and the relationship there. You meet the other kids who are involved in this bullying and what it did to them. This one instance we're talking about from the beginning of the book, how it either traumatized them or angered them. And you meet teachers that were involved, and it slowly just goes along until we have prom night that Carrie attends. And essentially, you know, I don't mean to skimp over too much in a recap, but that's kind of what I liked about it, is that's what the book is. And you just kind of slowly learn about Carrie and find out that she has telekinetic powers and what, you know, essentially is wrong with her in her life and all the stuff around her. And did I miss anything in that recap? I mean, it's one of the things I liked about this book, was it was kind of a simple concept.
I mean, since it's the recap, we should just tell the audience, Carrie burns the entire town down, basically.
Yeah, I guess I should say that. Yeah, at the end, she at prom, yes, they, if you've ever seen the movie, it's a very kind of iconic shot. They pour pig blood on her at the prom, and she kind of snaps and essentially burns the school down, and then burns, yeah, essentially the town, takes the town, which I did not know, like, from the movie and stuff. I wasn't aware that happened. And she just goes on a kind of rampage. And that's kind of the big finale that it leads to. So I guess to start off this whole discussion, I don't think we have to go in order, but I do feel like the one place we have to start is the opening scene. And so, like I said, Carrie's taking a shower at school in a public shower. She starts to have her period and doesn't know. She thinks she's like 16 and doesn't know what a period is. It's the first time. And so she's freaking out. She thinks she's dying. And essentially all the girls in her school kind of laugh at her, chant at her, throw, you know, tampons at her. And she's kind of going crazy. Her teacher even slaps her to calm her down, which I was like very 2023. I was like, whoa, this is gonna fly today. We'll start with Wombat. As an opening scene, so to speak, how did this, what'd you think of it? Did you have any problems with it? Did you think it was a good opener for a King book? For me personally, I thought it was a great way to just hook you into the story, but curious on your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I come at this from the I am a man perspective. I thought it was a good opener. You know, it's not my favorite King opener. I get maybe some criticism of people seeming kind of like characters in the scene, but it sets the tone for how these people view Carrie, and that really holds for a lot of the novel and ultimately is kind of the catalyst for the end. And so right away, you know a lot about Carrie from this scene. You know, we take away the fact that she's lived like a sheltered life and how she's treated by her peers. And even, you know, as you mentioned, the teacher, you know, even has a second of perspective in this chapter where she even is kind of disgusted by Carrie or upset by her ignorance. I think it's a pretty good opener. I totally 100% understand why people feel strongly one way or another about it. I've only ever been a man, so, you know, I don't know how well this lands for the female audience, and I'm sure Little Red Book's gonna
I'm going last. Yeah,
I'm sure you're gonna let it fly. It is interesting to contrast this scene, though, I think, just before I end it out here, with some of his scenes of teenage boys in other books that you've read. So if anyone else read King, his ability to capture the life of a teenage boy is amazing. Some of these other novels, I think that is, to me, where King shines above anyone. I don't know how well he lands with the female side of things. So it is kind of interesting to read something from King that's in this female perspective, an all-female perspective in this scene. Kind of unique work in the pantheon of King novels in that way.
Hmm.
But I think it's a good scene. I mean, it sets the tone. There's no doubt in that. So
yeah. I do like what you said, how it kind of tells you a lot about Carrie. Without, you know, it shows you rather than tells you. It's like, oh, this girl's clearly sheltered. She's 16 and doesn't know about periods. You know, full personal thing, my daughter is 11 and we're just entering this phase, and it's horrifying for us as a parent. But so to be 16 and not know, is that's even more horrifying. And for me as reading, I'm like, oh my God, how did, like, you know, the first thought I had about that was like, who are her parents? You know, that was literally the first thing I said, that this. But so with that scene, and I'm going to try to predict the future and what Red's going to say after me and try to maybe balance it out. So the thought I had with this is not so much that it's so much female oriented, which it is, obviously. But the way I look at it is that, oh, this girl is in the out crowd. You know, she's the way she's even described King purposely, a bovine face, pig face. She's described as someone who's not part of the in crowd, and the people who are doing this to her are part of the in crowd, either popular or, you know, things like that. And I think that going forward in the book, that was the first start, or even the teachers, they find her kind of repulsive, as you alluded to, that it's, you know, even the male teacher, you know, everyone does, the female one, the gym teacher. So I didn't, you know, I was going to say, you know, I could see this being all boys in the shower and something embarrassing. I don't know if I totally believe that. I think it was purposeful that he chose girls. But for me, the biggest thing was like, oh, this is like the basis of this book is that you have someone who is an outcast, so to speak, and the dynamic of that. And I think particularly when we talk about Sue, I really am excited to talk about how she deals with the guilt of that and trying to make amends to an outcast that Carrie is. But so I do find the opening scene very, I think it does what it's supposed to. Brings you into the book and it's like, oh, I need to keep reading. But I'm not totally going to argue that it's without faults. Yeah. But go ahead, Red. I'm sure you have problems with the scene, maybe.
You, I actually agree with most of what you guys said. It does set the tone. It does it well. I 100% believe that there are teachers who, there are kids who are so outcast that for whatever reason, they're sheltered or whatever. That they struggle with certain students. Does that make sense? Like I totally sure. believe that this gym teacher's reaction to her was not out of place. What is out of place is, because I remember watching the movie and asking my mom if girls in the 70s were different than girls in the 90s, because there is no way they're all standing around tossing soap around to each other, soaping up. This is like, okay, I'm going to compare this to Animal House, okay? You know how at mm-hmm. Animal House, they look into the sorority and the girls are in their bras having a pillow fight? This is like the horror version of that.
Yeah. So yeah, girls, so you're saying it's unrealistic that they would do that.
Girls get, like, if we take a shower, which I never took a shower in gym, but if it, say they're required to take a shower, they will not look at each other, not talk to each other in the shower if there's no stalls. Like maybe if there was a stall, we would holler over it. And they would get dressed as quickly as possible. Second of all, there's no way that she could be 16 and not know what a period is if they are showering in this way. Plus, sex ed was widely available in Maine at this time.
Right.
So, no, she would know what a period is at 16. She would be like, it doesn't matter how sheltered she is. She's going to a public school. Like, if she was homeschooled, maybe. And it's just the whole conceit of the opening of the book is why I think I bounce off this book so hard. There's other reasons I don't like it, but that scene is horror Animal House. Girls would not like that. Not that we don't bully each other. We do. We 100% do bully each other. That shower scene, man. I'm just like.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
It's so it really does tick me off. It makes me think of a sweaty teenage Stephen King imagining girls in the locker room. That's what it makes me think of.
Do you want to go, Wombat?
Yeah, I'm not going to push back on that. I just want to add, because this is really alluded to in the text. You know, we get this epistolary style, and a lot of it is in the form of like these news clippings or like someone writing a story. And they focus in on this as the start of puberty and a traumatic event as something that triggers her telekinesis, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I have to think that King really just dialed these people up to 11, you know, because the point isn't the shower scene. The point is I need to trigger Carrie to have such a horrific event that it triggers this latent ability in her. Right. And, I totally get what you're saying, Red. And I don't disagree. I just think the true horror of this story is people and how they treat each other. It's not so much the telekinesis, right? And I think King's really trying to analyze that through a few different lenses. You know, he kind of goes down this religious fanaticism lens with her relationship with her mother, the lens of relationship with her peers, her relationship with the school staff even, right? And so I think I got to think that it was intentional. You know, I don't think the execution was great, and so no pushback from me. But I do King is the type of writer where I feel like that was a really deliberate decision to just dial this up. You know, we need to throw things in the pot immediately so that we know that this has triggered something in Carrie and that it's building towards something else. And that's kind of like how he starts it off. So anyway, that's all I had.
You know, I agree that that's what he's trying to do. And I just don't like the way he does it.
And yeah, totally fair.
I don't like that he uses female puberty as some kind of dangerous, scary thing. Because girls already have, like, issues with going through puberty. It's really hard. Men suddenly start noticing you in a way that might be uncomfortable. And it's a difficult process. I'm not saying it's not difficult for a man.
I guess let me ask you this. Like, if the age had been different, maybe she's 12 or 13 and didn't know, would that have landed differently for you?
Maybe if it was done, but not with a shower.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, fair.
Because the shower part is the part that's icky to me.
Okay. Yeah. I take this from the perspective of if I was bleeding from my genitalia and I had no idea what was going on, that would be horrifying.
It would be.
Yeah, it would be terrifying to me. Yeah.
It's horrifying when you know what's going on.
Yeah. And so I guess I kind of see why maybe he chose that event, because it's a naturally occurring thing. And it, you know, to the ignorant, it would be kind of scary if he really didn't know.
I will say, so a couple of comments, and I will preface this with saying I actually kind of do agree with Red in the sense that it is, and Wombat, like, it's heightened. Like, I don't know enough about culture in the 70s in high school with girls or boys that it wouldn't happen, so I can't say. But I also realize, like, it seems over the top when you're watching it. But two things for me that struck out is, one, if you're young and watching this, even I think you said it, Red, when you first watched the movie, you had to ask your mom, like, do people really act like this? Because your first instinct is you're nervous. You're like, I don't want to go to high school and this is how it is. And I think for young people reading this book, I don't think they realize that that's not how they act. It still scares them immediately, this embarrassment in front of kids, whether anything it could be, you know, that you're just, everyone's mocking you. And I think it's not, I can't think of the word, it's unrealistic in your head. You know, it's not factual. Like, when you're a kid, you think the worst about everything. You know, you think if you toot in class, everyone's going to laugh, you know, you're going to be laughed off the planet forever. So I think he taps into that in that scene. But more importantly for me as an adult reading it, the biggest horror, the thing I related so much in this scene, and it's more so as the book goes on, is the scariest part of that is being essentially Sue, is that when something like that is going on, and people are bullying someone, and you don't step up, and you're complicit in that, and you just slowly go along and being complicit. Mm-hmm. That's, like, to me, that's kind of the real horror, is that, like, how easily you can, like, I could say now as a 30-something-year-old man, where I would step up and say, hey, this is wrong, or whatever, maybe what the teacher did, even though she struggled with it. But when you're a teenager, I've been there. I have regrets in high school, where not that I bullied, but I didn't stick up, and I've seen kids get bullied. And I just was paralyzed into just kind of awkwardly laughing, because it's hard. And it's like, you don't want to go over to the side that's being mocked and, you know, laughed at. So that to me is the thing that I really took from that scene. You know, I obviously felt bad for Carrie, but I took how, as it went along, you could get a lot of POVs with Sue and how clearly this damaged her, where she was really felt bad about what she didn't do essentially in that scene. And if you really think about it, I argue that Sue is the main character in this book. The way it's written, because you get a lot more character development from her than really anyone else. And I think it's all from that first scene that she's kind of, you know, grossed out by Carrie and really feels bad for her the whole rest of the book. So to me, that's like what I take from the scene. I don't think that contradicts what you say, Red. I kind of, like I said, I still kind of agree. But the big horror for me is like that secondhand embarrassment, not doing anything about such a thing happening.
I've never thought about it that way, Yeti. I actually think that you're probably right, that Sue is probably the main character, considering that one of the sources they use is her memoir.
Yeah.
But again, it's not the bullying. It's the whole shower. Like, the idea that they use the shower, that's right. What pisses me off. It's not the bullying. I just think it just, the bullying, 100%. I did not question that would happen. I actually had a a situation like that in the fifth grade where I should have stepped in that I remember very, very clearly.
I feel like we all do, you know, right?
And I don't know where that girl is now, and I wish I could say sorry.
Yeah, I mean, it's a super relatable human experience, I think, and King nailed that aspect. And I think you're spot on. Oh, I was going to say, I think you're spot on about Sue being the main character. That was something I was going to get into when we talk about the kind of the epistolary nature and the structure.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I would like to, if it's okay with you, I think the next big thing we need to talk about is, and this can go in any direction you guys want, but Carrie and her relationship with her mother. This was a question I was going to ask at the end, but like, you guys can touch on it if you want. But the scariest thing, like, what's the scariest part of this book? Like, I think Wombat even said earlier, it's not the telekinesis. Like, that's really not that scary. You know what I mean? To me, it was what I first said, that idea of not stepping up, to someone when they're being bullied and kind of being complicit. And the second thing I was thinking, it's either that or being this sheltered by a parent and really being this unloved. And I think clearly King uses religion as a framework for this in this story. But either way, Carrie's mother is clearly the main source of, I don't want to say problems that Carrie's had, but is really a hindrance to her. And if you want to speak on that, Wombat, just what you thought about her mother in general as kind of really maybe the main antagonist of the story.
You know, it's interesting. We get revelations about her mom all the way until the very end. You know, we find out that I believe it's Carrie's grandmother or great grandmother had this ability.
Yeah,
right.
It's her grandmother.
Her grandmother, and that the mom, you know, I grew up around this and saw this. And so when you start, you know, if you look back at the book with the advent of hindsight, you can kind of see how that might have rattled someone and pushed them into some form of religious fanaticism, I think, you know, to see something that you can't explain, to have this framework of explaining things in religion and then quantifying it as something bad. But yeah, I mean, I 100% think that she, a single antagonist, yeah, I mean, she's got to be it, right? I mean, I still think probably the real villain in this story to me is just people in general, right?
True.
You know, we have this scene that kind of ties in with Carrie and her mom, but this stands out to me a lot when I think about this book. And it's from the neighbor's perspective, when the neighbor is out suntanning, right? And, you know, a small Carrie, you know, whatever age they said she was, 5 or 6 or whatever, three. Yeah, so very young, comes over, and then mom freaks out. Well, and the neighbors now are hearing horrible things from this house. They're even, like, kind of seeing this happen, right? Like, these things falling. And it kind of ties back into what Yeti says, you know, we see stuff like this a lot in our everyday nature. You know, this is coming from a guy that was a cop for a few years too. And a lot of times we don't say anything, you know,
right.
And think about, you know, how the neighbor and her mom must've felt too, you know, kind of that Sue reaction, like, dang, what if we had said something earlier? And so, you know, her mom really is not a good person, I don't think, and didn't handle things well, and their relationship is terrible. I mean, it's abusive. There's no other way to say it. But
I mean, her mom's a homicidal maniac.
Yeah, I mean, she's, yeah, there's not a shred of defense in my body for her. I can see how something scared her enough that she needed to define it, and how she got to the definition of these powers that her grandmother had and that her daughter manifested as being evil. I don't agree with it. I can kind of see how King led us there. You know, I just think that the real scary part of this, the thing I think is the villain, is not speaking up. You know,
yeah.
I think you nailed that on the head, Yeti B. It's like, where it's just, you know, we have so many examples in this book where people have seen something awful in regard to Carrie White, and they do nothing. You know, they just do nothing. And then half the town gets burned down and everyone's dead, you know.
just, I shouldn't laugh, but it's...
it's just...
What do you do?
Yeah, it wouldn't have taken a lot, I don't think. And we'll get into that with Sue, because I'm really super fascinated to hear what you guys have to say about that. And maybe if she could have handled that a different way. But she at least tried, you know? Maybe. Mm. We can argue how
we'll
much.
We'll get into it.
But... Yeah, anyway, that's all I got. I mean, her not a lot to say about her mom. I just think it is interesting that King used the lens of religion to analyze this.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of notable that he did that because how I just thought I hate speaking for authors, and I don't want to. I don't want to put words in their mouth, but it seemed like he was relating how hypocritical her mom was with religion. You know, like all the things that she was saying, it was devil's work, or like going out with a boy and things like that, you know, as part of, that's all things that she did as well, you know, and maybe regrets she had. But those are things that she all went through. And I always felt it was hypocritical of her to be telling Carrie she can't be doing because she had a bad experience with a person that, you know, it would turn out bad for her. And I think she always kind of used religion as this framework, you know, because religion, I'm not going to get into my religious views, but it's malleable, you know, people can use it for good or bad. And I felt this way, she used her religion as a way to kind of hinder Carrie's, you know, adolescence that essentially doomed her, you know. But what do you think, Red? How did you find their relationship? And hopefully you had a better relationship with your mother than she did.
Yes, I did. Actually, yeah. I was very lucky. I grew up in a very religious home and still consider myself religious. But my mom was also a nurse. And so she was always very blunt with me about sex and about what it was. And yes, this is the morality I have around sex. But also this is just the facts of life sort of thing. This is neither here nor there. I just listened to a podcast about Jim Jones. In Jonestown.
Love Jim. Well, I don't love him, but I love
him. Yeah, yeah. It's interesting. Her mother reminds me of Jim Jones and her little Jonestown of two, her and Carrie. Hmm. That's what it makes me think of. The problem, doesn't she kill Carrie's dad?
No, he dies in a work accident, if I remember right.
Either way, he's dead. So there's no way she can keep Carrie this sheltered because she's working. So I don't buy that. It's just not believable. But I do agree about the neighbors not saying anything. This girl is clearly being abused. And she tries to kill Carrie like two different times before she stabs her at the end of the book, right? Or thinks about it, at least. And
well, yeah, as a baby, she... Did she like put a scissor up to her head
or something like that? And then the iconography is all wrong in the this is the movie, never mind. But she misquotes the Bible so many times I want to throw things in this book. It's really upsetting,
but I think that's purposeful. Like that goes along with the hypocrisy.
Well, yeah, but whatever. I mean, if we're supposed to go forth and be fruitful and multiply, then you need to have sex. That's just the thing that needs to happen. Right. And there have been Christian cults that don't allow sex. And you know what happens to them? They don't last very long. Because no babies happen. Just saying. And one of my bugaboos with King is he likes to use religion in this way a lot, and it bugs me. Like, find another scapegoat, please. Thank you.
Did you have anything to say, Combat? Sorry.
I was sitting here thinking this is kind of off the wall, but how much I would love to see a Mike Flanagan adaptation of Carrie with religious monotones and Midnight Mass and some of his other works. I just think, gosh, it'd be phenomenal. But anyway, that was just an aside.
I've never read him, so I don't know.
I think he's like a director who directed like all the Netflix horror movies. Like he adapted Shirley Jackson's, what's that, House on Haunted? One of the
Haunting of Hill House.
Okay,
Haunting of Hill House. So he adapted them for Netflix. And they're very good. He did Dr. Sleep, Stephen King. So he definitely has a knack for King's voice as well. Let's actually, since we've been alluding to it, we might as well get into it. Let's talk about some of the other characters in this book, essentially the ones who were kind of vital to this bullying of Carrie in the beginning. And we might as well start with Sue. And, you know, Sue is one of the girls who kind of bullied her, but felt bad about it. And essentially, you know, her big plan is to, you know, make herself feel better or make Carrie more included is to, she asks her boyfriend to invite Carrie to the prom to be her date. And her boyfriend, I think Tommy Ross, is a super popular kid. And, you know, this is her way of saying, hey, you know, we'll make her feel inclusive to do this. In my mind, I immediately thought that, you know, because you're kind of viewed as Sue's like a good person trying to do a right thing. And to me, this immediately like clocked as just the laziest thing to do, that she didn't really want to enact change. It was like, it's like if you have an empty gesture where you say, hey, if you need anything, let me know. But you don't really mean that. You don't really want people to hit you up and be like, well, actually, yeah, I could help you. You could help me move this weekend. You're like, ah. That's not really action for that. And that's what this came across to me, where it's like, yeah, I'll just have my boyfriend go to the prom. I don't even have to go. I'll do this. She'll have a great time. And I just love that choice by King. And I loved that there really is no good people in the story. Maybe you could argue Carrie because she was, you know, so abused that she had the potential to be. But really, I never thought Sue was a good person at all. I thought she was almost maybe not as bad as Chris or Carrie's mom, but I really was I was even more let down that this is the way you're going to try to help Carrie, who really has severe problems. This was it. And frankly, I loved her ending. I thought she got such a comeuppance, and maybe I'm depraved, but I loved it.
Her ending, she goes to trial and everyone blames her. That's her ending? You think she deserved
that? Her ending to me was that at the very end when Carrie dies, Carrie unloads her feelings into her head. Everything in her life, all the abuse that she's telling her to stop, like you're overloading it. And right before, even is with her in her mind when Carrie dies, like to be with someone and feel their final thoughts. And she even said, it's like, I'm feeling my last thoughts. I thought it was horrific. I was just like, it was one of my favorite King endings of all time of the books. And I think it alluded to her, because I'm pretty sure, you guys can correct me if you didn't see this, but I think Sue was pregnant. And I'm pretty sure they alluded to her losing the baby at the end of that.
Yeah.
So not 100%. Only did Carrie die, she took her unborn baby with her. And I just, that was like a great ending for, you know, maybe a middle tier King book. But go ahead, Red, what'd you think of Sue? Or any character, but.
Well, I think Tommy was a good guy. Or at least
maybe he was.
This whole thing makes no sense. It makes no sense why Carrie says yes. This whole part of the story, I'm like, what? Sue would still want to go to prom. I'm sorry, she would. She certainly wouldn't send her boyfriend. And Carrie definitely knows that Tommy is Sue's boyfriend. Like, the whole town knows that it's on the freaking ballot. Like, just none of this makes sense to me.
I think she knows it, but she so wants to be like something nice to happen to her.
Yeah, but when Tommy first asked her, she says, you guys can't always fool me. You can't keep fooling me. And
yeah, she knows
that
it. Was,
that response makes sense. Her eventually saying yes makes no sense. I'm sorry. I don't buy it. I don't buy it. I don't buy it. It's awful. But speaking of quotes, because this is the quote that I actually have, and it's right after Tommy and Sue have sex for, it's like they've been having sex for a while, but anyway. Right. But hardly anyone finds out that they've really actually hurt other people. People don't get better. They just get smarter. You don't stop pulling wings off flies. You just find better reasons for doing it.
Yeah, that was a great quote.
And that's what Sue says to Tommy after she's asked him to take Carrie out.
Yeah, I love that quote. I'm glad you kept that. I need to highlight that too.
And I'm like, yeah, she's just being smarter about pulling the wings off the flies. Because Carrie knows this boy doesn't love her.
Right.
It's like giving her leftovers, basically. Sloppy seconds, so to speak.
Yeah, it's a band-aid for a gunshot wound to the stomach.
Yep.
Right? What would her going to this dance really solve? After, if everything went perfectly the next day or week, Tommy wouldn't really talk to, you know, talk to Carrie.
She'd still be alone, and she'd still be stuck with her mom. It doesn't fix anything.
So, yeah, that's a great point. It's Wombat, are you on the same wavelength with Sue?
You know, I think you guys were talking me into it a little bit. No, I mean, my gut reaction was not so negative to Sue.
Oh, preach.
I think it's a unique situation probably for Sue. She's a popular gal. She talks about how Tommy is a popular guy. You know, their interaction actually in the car that Red just quoted from is maybe one of my favorite scenes in the entire book, actually, because...
I agree, by the way.
Tommy shows, you know, such maturity. Like, you know, no one's really going to care about high school when we're gone, and none of this really matters. You know, like, he's...
Right.
He is in this kind of upper echelon of popularity and still has the frame of mind to know that it's just high school. You know, I think quite literally in this book, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. maybe it was a lazy way. And I think the more I'm sitting here thinking about that comment, I agree with it. But she's at least trying something, you know. To her, it might be, you know, there's this way I think about relationships. Like, you know, we have love languages for how we want to receive love, but we also have love languages for how we show love. So Sue is maybe giving up something that might not be that important to Carrie. It's the prom. You know, it's clearly not that important to Tommy, as he's kind of illustrated in the scene in the car. But it is important to Sue. And so Sue's trying to give something that she finds valuable to Carrie, I think, in an effort to kind of to bring her into the fold, right? To get her out of this social pariah status that she finds herself in. I didn't strike me as malicious, maybe lazy. You know, I guess I can agree with the lazy part. I definitely don't think she had any malicious intent with trying to get Tommy to take Carrie. And that puts her a step above anyone in this book. Cause you know, there's actually a quote from Brandon Sanderson, which I don't do often, but I think it's from Dalinar, but it's sometimes a hypocrite is a person who's just trying to change, essentially is the vibe, right? So Sue is trying to do something, and part of trying is failing, you know?
Right.
And so I can kind of at least respect the attempt. I think if she had wanted to really give Carrie lasting good memories about high school and get her out of this, she could have just tried to befriend her at school without the prom aspect, and it would have gone a lot further, right? But then we don't have the ending that King was going for here, I think. And so
I agree with you. I don't think she's malicious. I just think that I don't buy any of that whole setup.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm sorry, I just don't buy it.
My high school experience was like pretty easy, you know, and so, but I've seen people on the outs who felt like they're on the outs who really have wanted to be accepted, you know. It's not a feeling that I'm, you know, I've been privileged in that way to not feel that, but I know people have a deep, deep longing to feel accepted, right? And I think that that's where King's going for here is. Carrie has never felt accepted at anything, at home, in school. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She has no friends. You know, like this is the metaphorical olive branch that has come down, and she's latching onto anything trying to change her status. I mean, we kind of, in this buildup to prom, she's already changing her relationship with her mom, right? I'm not going in the closet again. I'm not doing that crap, right? Like, things are changing around here. She's... Maybe some of that was getting asked to prom and that giving her a sense of confidence, you know? So I don't know. I do think now that I've listened to you guys and I hadn't brought like thought about it from that perspective that it was lazy of Sue. I don't know that she deserved the brunt of Carrie's thoughts, though.
I'm saying this would not happen. That's what I'm saying. That I do not buy this series of events.
To read this is a fantasy book. This isn't a horror. This is fantastical.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm
that's not how girls work. We don't give our girlfriend our boyfriends over to other girls because we feel bad about them. That's just not a thing.
Well, I will say it's not just any girl. Like, it's not like Sue is threatened by Carrie. It's not like she's giving them to Tommy's not going to leave her from Carrie. And I do think
it's just so dumb. I'm sorry,
but I do think one thing I do believe in is that Carrie is so desperate for acceptance, like Wombat was saying, that I do believe that she would accept to go to prom with Tom. I do accept that because I think she knows it's a lie and she's so desperate that she can accept the lie.
She says it's a lie. She says
she knows it. And I think that just goes to show how desperate she is for any type of acceptance, even when it's just a flat out like a fake. The Sue part, I don't know. Like, maybe it's not true.
It's the Sue part I don't buy.
Yeah.
And I kind of don't buy Carrie, but maybe you guys are right about Carrie. I don't buy the same thing. I just don't.
Hey, if Scarlett Johansson, even though she was being paid $1 million to take me out to the dance and I knew she was getting paid for it, I'd still say yes. I'd say, well, okay. I guess so. Let's go.
Sure.
Even though I knew she didn't really like me for me. And that's how Tommy was. He's a good looking guy. Nice. Come on. Can't turn him.
Oh my gosh. The guy who plays him in the movie.
The hair. Like, oh like my Elizabeth God. Shoes hair.
Just permed out. What is
so awful.
What did you guys think about Billy and Chris? Curious.
Oh, they were cartoonist king villains. Like Billy was like the most note. Like that was like I clocked that as like this is a Stephen King book. Like it was kind of a Diet Coke version of it. Like he really perfected the bullies in like It and some of the other books, Stand by Me. But I was like, oh, Billy's like this dude has like rape on his mind, you know, he's just despicable. He's like a deadbeat who just drifts around. And Chris, you know, Chris is she's interesting, but I'm trying to think what King was trying to say with her. I don't want to call her totally a cartoonish villain, but she's just a privileged kid who didn't have empathy. And I think at that age there's just, and well, frankly, I think even at older ages now I've learned to see that that people don't have empathy, but definitely at a young age in high school, empathy is just not there with a lot of kids at certain times. Like you either grow into it. So she was just someone who just was very selfish, who thought she was better than people, and she had a hankering for revenge and resentment. And her dad was a lawyer.
See, I actually thought she was an interesting kind of mirror to Carrie in the fact that she also has lived a really sheltered life, but in the other way, where her dad obviously cares about her success and well-being to her detriment, right? And that my 100%. Number one standout scene in this book is the interaction between her dad and the principal.
I love that scene.
But we see that how this is ruining Chris's life, right? I mean, I think he's heavily implying like there's different ways to shelter your kids that is bad for them, you know. We have the really black and white version of Carrie, and I think to a lesser extent we have that with Chris. Like, you're doing her no favors, Chris's dad, by bailing her out, by not letting her be held accountable, by doing all this thing. And so they're an interesting kind of mirror of each other to me, is how I thought of Chris. But stand with you 100%. Billy is that quintessential king bully that just, I mean, yeah. He does that better than anyone in the business, I think, especially in his little later books. But, Chris, I think that's what he was trying to say with Chris. I could be wrong. That's just my one man's interpretation.
No, I love it. You nailed it. I wish I saw that.
In fact, there's this really interesting scene where Sue goes to talk to Chris at the shop. And Chris says to her, well, I never thought you'd be part of the establishment standing up for Carrie or whatever she says. Something along those lines. And I'm like, girl, you are the freaking establishment. What are you talking about? You're just slumming. You're slumming right now. That's all this is. You're just like, Yeah, he's not like the other boys that I've been with. It's bad. It's just, and that part of her character, I 100% believe. Because there are girls who like that. They don't have anything really to lose. And they see some guy who's kind of a F up, which is what Billy is. And they're like, oh, it'll be so fun to go play on that side of the tracks sort of thing. And it's just like, but I agree with you, Wombat, that she's being sheltered to her detriment. She doesn't ever have to face any consequences. And I love that the principal just tells her dad where to stick it.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, so that's good. A 10 out of 10 scene.
Yep. I didn't see it going that way. I thought he was going to cave. And I was like, oh, yes. And then I was like, oh, this guy's definitely going to die. So I'm a good Samaritan.
He doesn't die, though.
He doesn't. I know. I was surprised.
He
was
like, oh, yeah.
Yes. I loved it. And he knew it was coming.
But you haven't said what you thought about Chris, did you?
Yeah, I did. And Wombat put me in my place. I didn't know what King was going for with her. I just thought she was kind of cartoonish.
Oh, okay.
But him, I never saw that mirroring where she's also sheltered. I mean, that makes complete sense where her dad is protecting her to a detriment. And it's really relatable where it's like, as a parent, I feel like I get caught up in that sometimes. Red, you would know this. Sometimes you got to let your kids just go out and make mistakes, and you got to condemn them when they're being mistakes. You know, you just can't protect them all the time. I'm not a lawyer, so I can't protect
them. The other thing I want to say about this is why I say it's like King looking in from the outside on how mean girl dynamics work. You never see Chris interact with any of the other girls. And so you don't understand how she exerts power over the other girls. And queen bees are a thing, you know? And I just couldn't buy her talking people into voting for Carrie so she could dump Pig. I don't understand. That doesn't work. That whole thing doesn't work. It really doesn't work in the movie, but it doesn't work in the book because you don't.
It's a big nitpick in me. We'll get to that. I have a big nitpick with that. Definitely. So I want to talk about the ending, but first I'll clear out for Red if she wants to go off about movie versus book. If you want to have any time to speak on that before we get end with the talk about the ending.
It's just, first of all, you can't get into characters' heads in movies the way you can in books. And then you have the ending. First of all, they don't light the town on fire. It's just very low stakes. I'm just trying to think about what really, the way that she kills Chris and Billy at the end, where they're just driving at her on purpose or something, which they do in the book, but it's after they're already freaked out and scared of her. It's just like the whole thing, it doesn't work. They put the Night of the Stones basically is the end of the movie where it's when she's three and in the book, and it doesn't have the impact. Like, what is so scary about her collapsing her house on her mom and the rest of the town is fine? It's just, and the high school blows up, I guess. I mean, but that's the only thing that blows up. I don't know. I just hated it. I hated everything. But I don't like the story anyway, because as I said, like, the whole female puberty is scary and it makes you evil, and women have this scary, deep, dark power that we're going to destroy everybody around us. I'm not saying that there aren't women who wouldn't do that, I guess. There are many who would do that, too. It's not...
I don't think the period made her evil or going through that. I think the people made her evil. I think that's what he was going for. How she was treated made her,
We can talk more about that as far as the end of the book goes.
Yeah. Wombat, did you have any problems with the movie, or you thought it was a decent adaptation?
Yeah, I mean, I actually pretty much agree line for line with Red. I think the way she, I don't know if it was just a budgetary thing or a director's choice. I have to think probably budget, but yeah, the ending would have been a lot different. I would have tried to keep that a lot truer to the book. I hated that they changed the way she killed her mom. I think in the book, that was a much more intimate way to kill her. You know, it held a lot more weight for me when she basically is like, I'm gonna stop your heart from beating now, you know, like we're done.
Oh yeah.
And you could have done that without special effects.
Yeah, that I don't. Yeah, I. There's a lot about the end of the movie. I really think the book is superior to the movie in pretty much every way, and I don't really understand why this movie's a cult classic, which is unusual for me because I'm generally a big cult classic guy. But I think the ending was a lot better in the book, and there's a part of it that stands out to me with her. Like actually thinking like her mom, right? Like this place needs to be cleansed with fire, essentially. Right? She's like thinking in these, you know, she's flipped open straight to the book of Revelations, and it's just fire and brimstone, and all these people are going with her, and it is interesting. You know, some of her last thoughts were that her mom was right, which I think is kind of fascinating. How King turned that whole thing on its head at the end, but yeah, the. This is a really famous ending for a reason. So,
100%.
Yeah, I think for me the ending, I loved the choice of the writing style that was kind of asked in our Discord question of the news articles or the interviews. It really ramped up with the ending leading into like that prom, and I really enjoyed the way they kind of meshed that into the end because you're getting interviews from like a random drunk who got arrested, you know, earlier that night. And who's just waking up?
He wasn't arrested. He just walked into the cell. It's time out. It's time out for me.
Right. So you get interviews from him. You get, you know, obviously one of the cops on duty, Sue, of course. But so it just culminates so well into the sense of dread. And I think I talked to you guys earlier offline when I was saying I wish I didn't know the end already, like of the movie, because. I just would have been like, I can't wait to get to see what happens. But since I already knew, kind of like Carrie kind of snaps, when you kind of get a sense that's going to happen anyway. But so I really love that part of the end, which I don't, Wombat, I don't know if you're saying that didn't work for you as much, that writing style. But I thought that was really smart by King. And I've seen it mimicked in countless horror books, contemporary horror books now.
Yeah, the only part that didn't work about it, so I mean, it's hard to remember going into the story not knowing anything because it was so long ago for me, but right away he takes a lot of the tension out with the epistolary style. Like we know something terrible is happening that night, and I think I would have liked that revelation to come maybe on its own. Like it would have hit a lot harder. I mean, you kind of know something's coming anyway, just the nature of the book, I think, but that's it. Killed the tension for me a little, right? And I wanted a little bit more of that buildup. I wanted.
Yeah, I don't know, just because I'd seen the movie already, so I wish I could have a fresh take on that to see if I feel the way you did. If it would, you know, if I just read the book.
I actually am going to disagree, just because I felt like the way it was handled. I'm trying to remember, I read another book that kind of did this. It kind of had this slow building dread feeling to it. For me, I think that that's how I would have read it if I hadn't known the end.
Yeah.
And I've read a couple books that do that, and I think that this book does that pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, I won't push back on that. It's really dealer's choice. I just...
Exactly. It's not something, it's an opinion, it's a reaction, it's not, there's no right answer.
Yeah, I mean, and I think King does it well. I mean, the guy is a master of the craft, you know, and I think he's not a master in this book, you know, it's his first one, but I'm actually reading his second book right now, and just the growth even between his first book and his second book is outstanding. And let's say a lot of that's on display here, I think. I mean, the ending is iconic, right? I mean, we're still talking about this book from, what is it, 1975, and right. And the movie 1976 in the year of our Lord 2023. So,
no, so I want to push back on something, because you keep saying, I don't think he's saying her period made her do it. Okay, I don't think he is either. But he has this thing where it's, first of all, and Kip will probably laugh at me because I'm probably wrong and I misunderstand. Yes, women can have recessive genes. We can. That's what blue eyes are, right? Women can't have recessive genes that men can not have. Okay, so women can't have hemophilia. And we couldn't have, there's just no way for women to have recessive genes that men can also have. Can't have, I should say. So this whole thing where it's sparked by puberty, the power is. And everyone's freaked out and running around going, oh my God, there's a person out there who could, another person is going to burn down another town or whatever it is. And it's because she got her, you know, there. I don't like it. I don't like the tinge that is there.
Right.
And also, if it was that dangerous, then how come we haven't had these outbreaks like all over the world all the time? And we already know about it.
Well, I think that
it's definitely a circumstance of Carrie. It's like, it's right. About Carrie. And I understand that. I just don't like, especially considering some of the other things he does with his female characters. I don't like it. It feels icky to me.
Icky. Yeah, I get that. I mean, I'm not trying to defend King and his portrayal of weird character adolescence or sexual stuff. But I was going to say
there's two mentions of rape where the woman ended up liking it.
I mean, that is a King staple that I will not stick up for. I am not going to I'm not going to touch that with a 10-foot pole. But yes, I did. I also noticed that as well. I mean, that is, as a King reader, nothing new here. But again, I still think that point stands. Like what you said, this doesn't happen around the world. And there's definitely people with telekinesis. And I don't think it's because of the period. It's because this town is trash. Like Wombat said, these people are so cruel to Carrie. Her mom is so cruel to her that's why this happened. And that's why I think when you see all these interviews and Sue is preaching that, to this, I guess there's a court case going on to these people, because these people kind of maybe think, you know, it's a woman, maybe they think it's a woman thing, you know, or whatever, you know. And Sue and everyone else is like, no, it's the way Carrie has been treated her whole life that this happened. Yeah. in combination with her powers. Wombat said, I think the biggest villain in the story is kind of society or people and their lack of either empathy or their lack of ability to interfere or do things for the better.
But the power of telekinesis is definitely assigned to only women can have it. That is a thing.
I think, yeah, that's, yeah, you're, yeah, right?
Only... And that's what I'm drawing on. That's why I kind of feel like it feels icky. It's like, King can be icky.
I wonder if there's some science, pseudoscience he read in the paper, or, because he did read, he's given interviews where he talked about the story came, one, because he was a janitor in a high school. And he was cleaning a locker, and he, for some reason, his first thought was women in locker rooms having your period, how would that be? And an article he read about telekinesis, there'd be a report of that, and what sparked, you know, obviously it's probably, I don't know what article he read or what, maybe in Playboy magazine or some phony thing, but he put those two things together, and, you know, he based it on two girls he knew in his real life. One was bullied because she wore weird things in school, and the other had cross above her couch, and he put those together and said, oh, what if there was someone who was bullied, and very, you know, that's how he does it. He gets these things.
I'm just explaining to you why, to me as a woman, it feels icky, and maybe definitely other women would feel differently.
I'm with you. I don't know why it's just women that can only have telekinesis powers. I don't I don't know what kind of brought that into his head, but anything about the ending else we want to talk about? I'm trying to think anything that Combat you wanted to bring up, either her death, anyone's death, the town burning?
No, I mean, there's a cool King Easter egg. I don't know if I'm allowed to mention it here, but
what book is it from?
It's actually from the short story The Body, or Stand By Me, your favorite movie. And it's really not a huge one, but
I was wondering if you thought Randall Flagg was in the book, because that's what I thought. Ooh.
Oh, no. The gas station that blows up in the town is actually owned by Teddy Duchamp, who's one of the four kids who goes on the adventure in The Body. So just a cool little a little wink of an Easter egg.
It is interesting that even at his first book, he's kind of like laying. He's like a, you know, Sanderson. Who knew he was a horror version of Sanderson even from the beginning?
Oh, no, I just say when I read that, I was like, oh, what a subtle little nod that really doesn't mean anything. It's just for the king heads out there, that the constant readers that, you know, have been read or watched a lot of King even. So kind of cool. And it was kind of cool that maybe he was thinking about a multiverse at book one, maybe. So.
Oh, the reason why I mentioned Randall Flagg is because there is a scene where you're in Margaret's head. And she's talking about sending the black man away and the lure of the black man, which is how he's referred to often in the Dark Tower series.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you, if you've read Dark Tower, Red, you know how much telekinesis comes up in the
yeah, King that verse. Too.
I
really do, for the most part, enjoy that series, but it needs. Stephen King needs somebody to say, you know, maybe we could cut this down by 500 pages.
That stands true for a few of his books, I think. So,
we got to pretty much all the Discord questions, I think, but there is one that maybe we should have brought up in the first beginning, but we can end with it. Wombat, do you think Carrie is a good starting point for Stephen King? Would you recommend it for people to start? If they want to read his books.
No, just because I think he's got other books that are better, maybe less controversial. And then I think you could pick Carrie up on the back end, you know, if you just want to fill out that King resume a little bit and pad it out. I actually think his second book, Salem's Lot, is a much, much better starting point. I think you get a lot more of the best of King without a lot of the kind of, you know, the flaws of this book. I think it could function perfectly fine. It just wouldn't be on my recommendation list for, you know, start here.
Sure. Red?
I would recommend The Gunslinger, to be honest.
Ooh, that's a spicy pick. Okay.
A collection of his short stories, and he writes. Definitely. So everyone thinks of him as a horror writer, but he writes a pretty broad. He has a pretty broad set of books.
He writes fantasy. He writes coming of age. Yeah.
I mean, The Body is yeah, exactly. It's coming of age. It's like there's nothing fantastic. Some boys are going to go out and find a body, and which
I never had friends like I did when I was 11.
Which makes me think that if you like The Body Guys, you should read
Boy's Life by Robert McCammon.
Something Wicked This Way Comes by Red.
I love that book. Yeah.
So good.
Love
so
that good. Book. Yep. Great, Rick.
I actually, just to go back to that, I think Pet Sematary would probably be the one I hand to someone.
Oh, God.
First King book. Just, and if you're a parent, you know.
I can't do it.
No, please.
Trigger warnings abound.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Don't just if you have little kids, don't read that book.
No. Yeah.
I quit watching Law and Order because I had children and I couldn't stand all the murder of kids and I was just like, I can't do this.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of maybe his most complete works you can hand. And I could see a lot of people liking it, you know, so I don't know. But Carrie's fine. I'm tempted to rewatch to watch the remake when we're done here just to see.
I watched it.
How it holds up. Did you like it?
It's not that good, but I don't think it's awful. I do think that the director does some decent things with the text, but Chloe Moretz, great. She's, I'm in love with her, so I can't see her as Carrie. It's even worse than Sissy Spacek. It's like this girl wouldn't get bullied. It's just not gonna happen. But it's, you know, it's fine. I wouldn't, you know, I liked Carrie. I don't know if I gave my rating. I'd say it's like middle tier King. I gave it like 4 out of 5. I'm pretty lenient, but I feel like King, there's other books where King, there's just does. Everything he does in Carrie, he's done better in another book, like almost everything. So, so I mean, you could read it as your first book. It just wouldn't be my first choice, obviously, but I wouldn't say, oh, don't start here. And particularly, I think it's one of his stronger endings. But everything else, I think, character-wise, definitely plot-wise, you know, he just does better in other books. I'm trying to think. I think Red made a great point. I think a great starting point is short stories. Night Shift, I think, is one of them. Definitely, if you're not so much into horror, I think I recommended 11/22/63 here. It's a very good book, and it's really a softer side of King and a really sentimental and romantic kind of part that I wasn't ready for.
That was the Kennedy assassination book, right?
Yep.
So, another book I would recommend I just read, because I know that King is not just Carrie and all the things I was complaining about. I just read Fairy Tale, and it's one of his newer books.
How'd you like that?
It was a delight.
Oh, nice.
I loved it so much. And it has zero weird sex stuff. Zero.
I'm out. Sorry.
Like, it has a fade to black scene, and that is it. But it's a fairy tale. It's a portal fantasy. He goes and he does a thing. And it also is an homage to just the genre. It's including Something Wicked This Way Comes is referenced in this book.
Well, I think that'd be a great intro for people in the Legendarium subreddit. I think that's a great recommendation to get them started. Mm-hmm. Well, let's call it here, folks. We got to go out trick-or-treating and watch horror movies. But no. I want to thank you guys for listening. Come join the Legendarium's Discord so you can interact with us with Combat Wombat, Little Red Book. Become a patron, especially if you want us. You can tell us if you want us to cover any books. If you want to hop on like Wombat for the first time and be a panelist, we're always welcoming that and more voices to be heard and meeting new people. Should I plug the Legendarium's meetup in February? Is that still official?
Legendarium. It is official. It's going to be on February 24th. We do not have a location, but Panda, one of our very active members here.
Wait, is it not in the Salt Lake City?
No, it is. We just don't have an actual physical site.
I bought my tickets.
We're still looking at booking a hotel, like the actual meeting space.
But right.
I have some estimates out there from a bunch of different hotels and whatnot. We're hoping to do it in a hotel this time so that we can, this is all stuff that is going to be way wandering, but we are hoping to have it in a hotel so that people can go to their room if they need a break from people. Cause all you crazy introverts who need breaks from people, I don't know what's wrong with you, but you exist.
You just got to recharge. It's good. So do that. And I guess I'll thank Craig for letting us do this. Go listen to the Legendarium podcast, my favorite podcast, obviously. Thank you for Horizon Brave for starting the whole shindig and getting us up and going. Thank you for Galactic Damages and Jingle Punk. Did I mix that up? I don't know.
Our music is Galactic Damages by Jingle Punk.
Perfect. And I'm Yeti Beats, and for Red and Wombat, we'll see you later.
Bye.
Bye, everyone. It, you know, take out the controversial scenes of It. It's got to be. I haven't read Boy's Life yet, Yeti Beats, so don't beat me up. But it's got to be one of the best coming of age stories of all time.